Stuart Hameroff, MD, Classical and Quantum Physics.
What's the difference between the classical physics and quantum physics? The universe is very strange. There seem to be two sets of laws that govern the universe. In our everyday classical world, meaning at roughly our size and time scales, things are described by Newton's laws of motion, set down hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And they work very well for billiard balls and cannonballs and gravity. And then we have Maxwell's equations for electromagnetics, and that's all classical, and that works beautifully. However, when we get down to a small scale, when we get down to, say, the level of atoms, and the actual threshold or cutoff is unclear. It can be actually larger in some cases. A different set of laws take over. These are the quantum laws, quantum theory, quantum mechanics. And at that level, particles may be in multiple places at the same time. They may behave as waves smeared out spatially and temporally. They may be interconnected over great distances. They may be unified into one quantum state, into one state, governed by one wave function. And the borderline, the threshold, this curtain between the quantum world and the classical world is really mysterious. It's called sometimes the collapse of the wave function, because in the quantum world, everything is in superposition of multiple possibilities, and in the classical world, these multiple possibilities seem to collapse to particular definite choices. So everything is in one particular place. This collapse, by the way, is utilized in quantum computation. Classical computers, for example, have bits where information is represented in a binary fashion as either one or zero. In a quantum computer, superposition is utilized, and information can be represented in superposition of both one and zero at the same time. These are called quantum bits or qubits. So if you have a system of qubits in superposition, they communicate with each other non-locally. They don't even have to be next to each other. Non-locally, as long as they're isolated in one system. And while they communicate, they process information according to the Schrödinger equation very efficiently. And this goes on for a while and performs computation. And ultimately, the system collapses, and each qubit of 1 and 0 chooses either 1 or 0. And that is the output, or the result of the quantum computation.
So how do these, you said they communicate, these two things. How do they communicate if one's there and one's here?
How do things communicate non-locally in the quantum world? Well, that's the big question. It's been Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen tried to more or less disprove this by coming up with a thought experiment. But ultimately, their thought experiment turned out to be true. They said that if two components of a quantum system, for example, two photons that were coupled with the polarization, opposite polarizations, or two electrons that were coupled with spin up and spin down, were in superposition. So, for example, the two electrons were both spin up and spin down. If they were separated, and one was sent down a wire 100 miles this way, and one was sent down another wire 100 miles this way, when they reached their destination, they would still both be in superposition of one of up and down. But if one is measured, the other one should instantaneously collapse to the opposite complementary spin. Sure enough, this turns out to be the case. This was first shown in the 1950s, and more recently has been shown hundreds of times in the laboratory. If you send, if you have a pair of coupled electrons in superposition of both up and down, send one down a wire or a cable to one village, another down a wire cable to another village, make a measurement on one, the other one instantaneously takes the opposite spin. Instantaneously, which means any information between the two must travel faster than the speed of light, which is thought to be impossible in classical physics. How does this occur? Nobody knows for sure. But one possibility that Roger Penrose suggested is that the information actually from this one goes backwards in time to when they were together, then out the other limb to the other one. And this is used in a system called quantum cryptography, where quantum theory is used to encode information that is basically uncrackable. Another aspect of quantum computing that's very efficient is factoring large numbers into their primes, which is also used in codes and cryptography, so that if and when someone builds a useful, efficient, reliable quantum computer, all military and banking codes will be obsolete. Therefore, governments and industry are pouring huge amounts of money into quantum computation, and tremendous progress has been made. And furthermore, when quantum information technology comes along, when we do have quantum computers, people are going to be more likely to accept the fact that we have quantum computers in our brain, because we certainly wouldn't want something on our desktop that's better than what we have in our between our ears.
Okay, how does non-locality, could you use that to explain things like ESP and near-death experiences and all that kind of stuff?
Can you use
a little hot and dry.
I was going to say entanglement, but you said non-locality.
Well, you could say entanglement. Either one. It's
okay. Can you use quantum non-locality and entanglement to explain things like ESP, near-death experiences, and so forth? I believe you can. I think entanglement and collapse in one system inducing collapse in another is exactly what happens in parapsychological phenomena. And it's also true that time can go backwards, so that they don't even have to be simultaneously. One can occur before or after the other. And near-death experiences, particularly when patients report leaving their body and floating above them, their bodies watching themselves being worked on and then return to their body, could be due to the fact that consciousness is ultimately a process in fundamental space-time geometry. And when the coherence driving the system stops due to the metabolic insult to the brain, the information is still in fundamental space-time geometry, which is everywhere. So it would tend to start to dissipate. However, due to quantum entanglement, would tend to stay somewhat localized and float above, maybe go out in the waiting room and visit with relatives, which has been reported in near-death experiences. But then when the body is resuscitated, revived, and the metabolic drive in the brain resumes, the information returns to its host, the brain.
Well, do you think many people say that they believe in reincarnation and remember experienced past lives and all this kind of stuff. Could this possibly be a mechanism whereby the universe kind of remembers who you are and what your tendencies are so that the reincarnation process? I mean, could this fundamental information be the bookkeeping of reincarnation?
Could the same sort of thing happen in death and in reincarnation? Yeah, I believe it can. I think the same sort of thing I described where the consciousness leaves the body and returns when the body is resuscitated. If the patient dies, then the quantum information or consciousness or proto-consciousness, if you will, isn't destroyed and may dissipate or may sort of hang together due to quantum entanglement to exist, in some sort of afterlife situation and possibly return to some other body being reborn subsequently over time, which would account for something like reincarnation. So I think it's possible if we assume that consciousness, or at least proto-consciousness, meaning something like our subconscious, exists at the fundamental level as a process of the fundamental level of space-time geometry, because that's everywhere and always was and always will be.